Good afternoon. My name is Thomas Dreipholz. I'm now presenting you our paper, High Availability Using Reliable Server Pooling. It's a project of our university, it's the University of Essen, in cooperation with Siemens. I'm first giving you a motivation why reliable server pooling is necessary, then I give you an introduction to our reliable server pooling architecture. Then I present you our implementation, the ASP.lib prototype with its API. Then I will tell you finally our current project status and our future plans. And if there's enough time, I will also present how to use distributed computing using the reliable server pooling architecture. First, fault tolerance is crucial for a growing number of applications, for example, e-commerce or control systems for machines or medicine or telephone signaling. For example, if an e-commerce system fails, it costs you money. And if some machine control systems fail, you could cause a damage of materials, for example, steel, or even human lives. And what you can do to prevent server failures is to have redundant servers. So if one server fails, you switch to another server and the service can be continued. There exist a number of proprietary solutions, for example, from Motorola. And there are also network layer solutions available, for example, a Linux virtual server. There was a talk yesterday. But network layer solutions have the disadvantage. It is only usable for a limited number of applications, for example, for web servers, where you download small web pages, and when you restart by re-requesting a web page from another server, this is no problem. But if your transaction lasts for a long time, for example, many hours, then you cannot simply restart. You have to implement a failover procedure. And to create an open standard for server pooling is subject of a new IETF reliable server pooling working group. It's called RSERPool. And they standardize a session layer server pooling architecture. This server pooling architecture is based on the SCTP protocol, the stream control transport protocol, which will already in kernel 2.6. And it is already available in kernel 2.5 under Linux. It provides message framing, in contrast to TCP, which is stream-oriented. And it provides the feature of multi-homing. You can connect your host to more than one network. And if one network fails, your connection can use the other network without affecting layer 5 and above. And it provides the feature of adding and removing IP addresses. It's the AddIP extension. It's not an RFC, but an internet draft, and it will probably become an RFC soon. AddIP can be used to add mobility without, for example, mobile IP. Now, some RSER pool terminology. First, a server pool is simply a set of servers providing the same service, for example, web servers providing the same set of web pages or video on demand system with the same video library. A pool element is a server of such a server pool, and a pool user is a client of any pool element. A name server manages the pool namespace. First, an example. You see a pool namespace with four pools. First, a download pool, an audio pool, a compute pool, and a video pool. And this video pool has three servers called pool elements PE1 to PE3. Now, if your client application wants to use such a video on demand system, for example, it asks a name server to get a list of possible pool elements. It will reply with this list, and the pool user, the client, chooses one of these servers and connects to it. So it becomes a pool user of this video pool. If the server fails, there are other servers, other pool elements, and a switch can be made to another server. If one of the name servers fails, they are also redundant. They synchronize their namespaces. So, yes?
So is this like a DNS-based?
No, it's not like DNS. I will explain it later. The protocol used for the communication to the name server from pool elements or pool users is the Aggregate Server Access Protocol, ASAP. And the protocol used to synchronize the namespace between name services, the ENRP protocol, endpoint name resolution protocol. The first element of the ASAP pool architecture is the name server. It manages the namespace. That is, a namespace is a list of pools. And each pool is identified by a so-called pool handle, which is simply a binary vector. This could be, for example, an ASCII or Unicode string like download pool or video pool. And in contrast to DNS, for example, this namespace is flat. There is no hierarchy. Now, the name server functionality is provided by the Aggregate Server Access Protocol, as I have said. It is the registration and deregistration of pool elements, then the supervision of pool elements, that is, pool elements are continuously monitored by the name server, so if one pool element fails, that is, it does not answer to keepalives or a pool user reports an error of a pool element, then it will be removed from the namespace. In contrast to DNS, when a server fails, you get its IP address, but you cannot connect to it. And, yes?
Is the failure reporting by pool users, is that to somehow pick up the security that you can't deny all the services by just reporting all the pool elements to
it? Yes. The name server may decide to remove the pool element, but if security policies forbid it, then the name server may decide to keep this pool element. For example, if it still answers to keepalives, then it can keep it, or it does not trust the pool user and keep it. Then the next functionality of the name server is the resolution of pool handle to a list of pool elements. And finally, the name server may announce itself by using multicast announcements. This is an optional feature of ASAP pool. As I have said, name servers are redundant. They synchronize their namespace using the endpoint name resolution protocol. Any questions? The next element of the architecture is the pool element. First, it has to find a name server, either by static list or by listening to name server announcements, then connect to a name server and register itself to a pool. And if this pool is not existing yet, it will be created by the name server. When the server is shut down, a pool element should deregister itself. And it is important to denote here that if one of the name servers fails, the pool element can choose another name server to re-register or deregister. It is not necessary to use the same name server. The communication between a pool element and name server requires SCTP, it is mandatory because of fault tolerance and supervision. SCTP has its own heartbeat mechanism and because of message framing. Any questions about pool elements? The next element of the ASA pool architecture is the pool user. It's a client application, and its functionality is to let the name server resolve a pool handle to a list of pool elements, transport addresses. These will be a part of the full pool. It is selected by a policy. I will explain it later. Then the pool user gets a partial list of all pool elements of the pool. Then it will select again by policy one of the pool elements and connect to it in to start the service, for example, video on demand or download or access to web pages. In case of failure, a failover procedure, which is application specific, has to be initiated, and the failure of the pool element can be reported to the name server, and the name server may decide to remove the pool element. A pool element selection policy could be, for example, round robin or least used or weighted random or random or whatever you like. New policies can be added easily because the protocol is very flexible, the ASA protocol. Yes?
I've worked with some of the proprietary ones, particularly for the ID Microservice on order, with the availability software for Unix. Is there a concept of events being broadcast to the different servers that are being effectively like your pool? And for some of the lens of the topology, so for example, if you have a network card failure, it doesn't get promoted up to servers tend to be more disruptive, as you said, and any of the applications have to take their own specific action. So is there anything beyond like a server element that's considered in the pool?
If a network fails, then SCTP may have another route, and the session layer will not see this failure. As a pool is necessary for application failures, then if your server completely fails, not only a single network, then, for example, a network layer solution cannot switch to another server. Yes.
Does this architecture actually code level is it all just based on all servers going down? So is there a way to promote the importance of a particular failure or track failures that aren't as important and say, well, I'm not going to switch over, I'm going to take some other action?
So if the application hangs, then usually deep alives via ASAP will not be answered from the server. So if your machine is running, SCTP heartbeats may be answered from kernel SCTP, for example. But if the application server is not running, then probably keep alives will not be answered at session layer. What?
Going to just network level or to your
There are heartbeat messages on the transport layer by SCTP, and there are again keep alive messages on session layer by RSAP. So if one of them fails, then the pool user to pool element communication has two parts. The first one is the data channel. It is used for the transport of application data like video or download, for example, and it can use any protocol, for example, TCP or UDP, RTP or SCTP or whatever you like. Then second, there is an optional control channel. It runs RSAP via SCTP, or it can use a mapping layer and TCP to provide the following functionalities. The first one is a business card. That is, the pool user itself is a pool element of another pool, and this pool user can tell its pool element, it is communicating to its pool handle. That is a business card. So the pool element is able to build up a connection to another pool element of the pool user's pool if the pool user fails. The second element is of the control channel is last will. For example, if five servers make a state sharing, then it is necessary to make a file over to one of these five servers. So if server one fails, there are only server 2 to 5 available to make a failover because they have the old state of the old server. And last will give the identities of these remaining 4 pool elements. And the last one is a cookie mechanism. A pool user always stores the latest cookie it received from the server. A cookie is simply assigned state of the server itself. So if the server fails, the pool user can make a failover to another pool element and send this new pool element the cookie. And the cookie, which contains the old server state, can restore the old state on the new server, and service can be continued. And a detailed description of this mechanism called client-based state sharing can be found in another paper of me. And it's also available on our project homepage. Now our implementation, the ASP.lib prototype. It's an open source version, and it is licensed under GNU GPL license. The requirements for our implementation were to support all kinds of platforms. We support currently Linux, FreeBSD, and Darwin. Darwin is the open source kernel of Macintosh OS. And in the future, we want to support many more, from PDA to supercomputer. And of course, especially PDAs and mobiles, for example, for e-commerce and mobile commerce. Of course, such devices will usually not be a pool element, but only a pool user, a client application. As implementation language, we have chosen ANSI C because it is available on almost every platform. Even a Commodore 64 has C compilers. Also, C++ would be preferable to maintainability of the code. The next thing is threads. We may not assume a specific implementation of threads, for example, pthreads or GNU-PCH or whatever you like, but our library should be thread safe. So we have to provide interfaces to make it thread safe. IP version 6 has been supported from the beginning of the project because, for example, for future always on mobile devices, like mobile phones or PDAs, it will be necessary because IP version 4 provides only 4 billion addresses and there are already 6.5 billion people on Earth. So more addresses are necessary and IP version 6 will be necessary in the future. Now a short look at our implementation. First, we have a class dispatcher. It handles timers and socket events, and it also ensures the thread safety of our system, independent of an operating system. The next large part is the ASAP instance class. It provides the ASAP protocol implementation. And finally, we have the ASP.lib API wrapper. It should make using our library as easy as possible because it should be possible to port existing applications in a very short time. The first one, the dispatcher class. As I've said, it provides handling of timers and socket events, and it provides a functionality for an event loop. Since we do not want to limit our implementation to specific operating systems and we want to make it portable to many others, we do not assume the presence of a select call. So we only provide a function getSelectParameters to obtain parameters for a select call from our dispatcher object. Then the user of the dispatcher object can make a select call or whatever the specific operating system provides. And finally, the user has to call handle select results so that our dispatcher object can handle. Yes?
In what sense is the dispatcher class a class?
It is written in C, but it looks like C++. We use object orientation, a pseudo object orientation for our implementation to make it easier to maintain our code. So I call it class, but it is not really a class, it is a structure. The next thing dispatcher provides is thread safety. As I have said, we may not assume a specific threads implementation. So we let the user provide callback functions for locking and unlocking at the constructor of dispatcher. Constructor is not a real constructor because we use C, but it's a normal function. We call it only constructor. So wherever our ASP.lib classes need exclusive access, we call functions dispatcher lock and dispatcher unlock, which call the lock and unlock callbacks. So if the user provides some system-specific locking functionality, it will be supported. And therefore, our implementation will be thread safe. Any questions? Next large block in our implementation is the ASAP instance class. As I have said, it's the ASAP protocol implementation, and it contains the following subclasses. It's first a server table, that is the ASAP instance learns the addresses of name servers from announcements received via multicast or from a static list. And it keeps the name server table up to date. That is, if a name server entry is not regularly renewed, then it is removed because the name server is gone. The next part is ASAP cache. It is a cache for the translation of pool handle to pool element. Then finally, we have the ASAP message class. It provides creation and parsing of ASAP messages. Questions? Now our ask questions. Now the ASP.lib API layer. As I have said, our implementation of dispatcher and ASAP instance should be portable to many different operating systems. It should be maintainable and extendable because the ASAP and ENRP drafts are not complete and they are still under development by the ITF ASAP pool working group. So changes may be applied through these classes. An important fact of both classes is that we use no global variables. If you have an operating system and a system having a memory management unit, you can simply mirror the full library to the address space of your process. And if you write to it, you can copy the page and have an exclusive page which is readable and writable. This is, of course, not possible if your computer has no memory management unit. For example, PDAs and mobile phones, or even routers like Cisco routers. What can be done is to have the full library code read-only. That is, it may not be written to. So global variables may not be allowed. Then this code can be shared between all processes on the computer. A good example for such a behavior is the old Amiga operating system. And it works quite fine without memory management unit. Now, supportability, maintainability, and extendability, and no global variables, and possible changes when ASAP and DNLP update make it complicated to use our classes. So our requirement is to write a wrapper layer to make using our classes much simpler. Therefore, we mimic DNS calls. I will explain it later. And of course, it is necessary to have a stable API. That is, if features are added, changed, or removed, the API should not change because you would have to change all your ported applications. And that is a very bad thing. So what we use is a simple mechanism, again, used like in Amiga OS. It's tag items. And tag items are simply an array of tag data tuples. And tag is simply a function unique parameter ID, and data is its value. So if you add the following list in the example, you set parameter 1 to 1, parameter 2 to 1234. And is it passing the data string? As it's no, you give this area as parameter for functions. So if you add new parameters, you simply add new tags, but you have not to change your API. Okay.
And presumably the implementation will basically ignore anything it doesn't recognize. So if we had a new
if some features are not supported and were supported in older versions, there should be an error code, or at least a debug message. So now an overview of our ISPlib API. We have functions for cleanup and initialization, the pool element functionality, register and deregister a pool element, the pool user functionality to make a name resolution and report a pool element failure, and finally an event loop. First, initialization, of course, creates a dispatcher object and an ASAP instance object. And cleanup, of course, removes board. But it is also used for another important thing, to find memory leaks. So if there are still memory blocks allocated after you call this cleanup function, you have a memory leak. And we used a very useful open source debugging tool under Linux. It's Valgrind, an open source memory debugger. And it simply interprets the full x86 code. So it can track usage of every bit in the code, and it makes it very easy to locate memory leaks and also a few other problems. Now the pool user functionality. As I have said, we mimic DNS codes to make it simple to adapt existing software, like, for example, a web browser or a download utility or a video on demand application to use ASAP pool. First, we have a look at a usual known ASAP pool program. It is simply to make a name resolution of a DNS name, like linuxconf.au. Then to create a socket of the appropriate type, for example, AF-INET or AF-INET6 protocol type and socket type, and then to connect to the server, do your transactions, and finally close out everything. Get address info is a newer version of get host by name, but get address info is thread safe, so we do not support get host by name because it's not thread safe by default on many operating systems, and it would cause portability problems. Now, to make the program ASAP pool capable is quite easy. Instead of the address info structure, you use an extended address info structure, which adds one element. It's the pool element identifier. Instead of DNS name, you give the pool handle. You make your name resolution, and then you can create your socket and connect. In case of failure, you report it to the name server. To make it simple here, I have skipped repetition loops. So if there's a failure, you would make a failover here. You would make a name resolution to get a new pool element, then connect to it and make a failover to it.
How's the resolution handled for the name search? Is it there was a multicast broadcast? I'm predicting that there's some kind of result later if the DNS would you specify.
No, it does not use multicast or broadcast. You make an ASAP connection via SCTP to one of the name servers. The name servers itself are announced by multicasts. So your program receives these multicasts and builds up a table of name servers and then connects to one of them.
Okay, so you don't actually have to configure it with what you're talking to as far as the resolution?
No, you do not have to configure name server addresses if you use multicasts. Okay. If your network prevents it, for example, for security reasons, you have to use a static list. but usually you should not have to configure it. More questions? Then to pool element functionality is of course to register and deregister a pool element and to answer to keep alive messages. To answer to keep alive messages is realized in an event loop in a function ASP select, which can replace a normal select call. Another thing a pool element has to do is re-registration. It has to be done, yes? What?
So does the RSP select function automatically create a timeout and the select function calls and then set keep alive?
Yes. It will create times by dispatcher class. And the ASP.lib player calls then select. It is the ASP.lib player is operating system dependent, so it can call select there. But select is not called within the dispatcher class. These parts are application operating system independent. So the re-registration is necessary regularly, for example, every 30 seconds or so. It's necessary when the name server fails, the server has to register at another name server, that is to find another name server, connect to it and register. Further on, parameter changes, for example, a transport address changes because of mobility, or pool policy and policy parameters change. All of this is also realized by the register call, but we do not implement the re-registration into the ASP select call. This has an important reason because if the name server fails, it has to be looked for another name server, and this may take some time. And it, within this time, if it is realized in a global select loop, in an event loop, it would block the service of the server. So the re-registration has to be done outside, for example, in another thread or process. But this should be no problem since server computers and its operating systems usually provide something like threads or processes. You would not use a single task operating system like MS-DOS for servers. Now our project status as of today. We have two software versions. The first one is 1.0.1. It's a stable version from August last year. It's quite a little bit old. And the newest is unstable 0.3.0d. And it will become probably the next stable version within the next weeks. We have to do still some compatibility tests under FreeBSD and Darwin, and then it will become the stable version. This presentation refers to our unstable version. What is implemented is ASAP according to draft version 5, but we do not have the control channel yet because it is not stable in the ASAP draft. It may change, and a last will parameter is also not defined in version 5. But version 6 will probably come in the next few weeks, and then we can implement it. The next thing is the name server. We have implemented one, but it does not currently support ENRP, so it is a single point of failure since it cannot synchronize the namespace with other name servers. We have not implemented it because the ENRP draft is quite unstable, but it seems to stabilize, and we can implement this in the next, I think, 4 to 6 months. At the moment, we use our userland HTTP implementation because HTTP is not in the kernel, was not in the kernel. It is now in the 2.5 kernel of Linux, and it will be there in the 2.6 version. And there will also be an HTTP kernel version for FreeBSD within the KeMe stack. It's also usable under Darwin OS. So our next major implementation step would be to implement ENRP. It's full support for redundant name servers, and I think there should be a version about summer this year. And of course, we will create more interesting example applications. At the moment, we have only an echo service, so it sends back characters you send to the service, and it is not very interesting at the moment. I think we will have this as part of student projects, if we can interest some students to make such projects. Now, we have not much time remaining, so I will make it quite short. Another application for the Etherpool architecture could be distributed computing, for example, something like City at Home. Using City at Home without Etherpool, you have clients which request data packets from a central server. The clients process them and send them back to the server. The problems are, of course, if the server is unreachable, the clients have to retry, for example, after some hours. And if there is no work to do, they have to ask later, for example, some hours later. The result is, of course, you have wasted bandwidth for unsuccessful trials. And only the one configured central server is served with computation power. And if you make distributed computing in the Etherpool style, you would have computation hosts registered as pool elements in a computation pool. A pool element, a pool policy, for example, here could be something like weighted round robin, where weight is a composite metric, for example, of the current system load and the computation power of the client. So a client, a computation client, which is a pool element, would receive work requests proportional to its computation power, current computation power. So when somebody requires computation power, it becomes simply a pool user of this pool. And the features of such an Etherpool style distributed computing are, of course, that pool elements get work when there is work to do. So they have not to ask somebody if there is work to do. And so there is no overhead when there is currently no work to do. And Etherpool provides selection by appropriate policies directly built in. And of course, it provides supervision functionality. So if you get the transport address of a pool element from the name server, it will be available and usable at a high probability. And of course, it also allows dynamic addition and removal of computation hosts to these pool elements. So now a short summary. I have given a motivation why Etherpool is necessary, then an introduction to the Etherpool architecture, that is the pool users, pool elements, name servers, and the two protocols, ASAP, Aggregate Server Access Protocol, and ENRP, the Endpoint Name Resolution Protocol. Then I have shown you our implementation, the ASP.NET prototype with its design decisions and classes, and the ASP.lib API which make it simple to port existing applications. Then you have seen our project status and future plans, and finally how distributed computing can be improved by our asset pool architecture. So that's all. Thank you for your interest in our project. Are there any questions? Yes? What? For distributed it is required that these elements are supervised, because you do not want to have invalid entries. But you can configure keeper life intervals. The pool element is always connected to one name server, but only to one, its home name server. And the home name server monitors it. It provides multi-homing. That is, it can use several addresses at one computer. For example, if you connect your Ethernet and your wireless to different networks, then your HTTP association uses both addresses of the computer. And if one fails, for example, the wireless, it uses the Ethernet connection. No. It simply uses IP, IP version 4 or IP version 6 or both. The HTTP also allows, for example, IPX. But I think there are no IPX implementations of HTTP.
If people want to talk to the speaker about this, could you please perhaps move off to the side? The next lecture is going to start in 5 minutes. So I'm sorry to kick you all out, but yes, thank you very much.